All right, let's focus on our deep inner breath for a few breaths. And with a deep in breath. Satchitananda, we're looking for a path for our personal spiritual transformation. Karma Yoga, the yoga of action. Up until recently, we've been studying the yoga of wisdom, or the yoga of Sophia, as Russ said today. And now we're going to take a look at Karma Yoga, the yoga of action. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here to where we left off last week and do a bit of a review. So we're going to look first here at Sloka number 5 from the Yoga of Action. No one is free of actions, even for a moment, because everyone is moved to do things by the qualities of nature, which are prakriti. That's what we're going to look at, prakriti, the qualities of nature. No one is free of actions, even for a moment, because everyone is moved to do things. We are moved to do things by the quality of nature. Now, most of what we're moved to do is by the qualities of nature, and we're a part of nature. So we are, our qualities are what move us to act. Let's look at those qualities of nature. The qualities of nature are known as the three gunas: sattva, raja, and tamas, and three qualities that function through prakriti, or nature. So some new words. Prakriti is just nature. Nature, or Mother Nature. Everything we experience in the world. And we can look at it through a filter of three aspects, or qualities. The three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. All right, here we go. The three qualities are similar to positive, negative, and neutral forces. So we can look at all of nature as either having positive, negative, and neutral forces. We have the three gunas even in an atom, you remember from last week, protons, electrons, and neutrons. And if you believe high school chemistry, everything is composed of protons, electrons, and neutrons. Of course, then the atomic scientists found out there's other things. There's quarks and all these other particles. And it's a model, isn't it? It's just a model. So we can look at all of nature through the model of the gunas. What are the difference between the elements, the number of protons, the number of electrons, the number of neutrons? We're just used to seeing differences. And the atomic theory says everything is composed of these three basic things. And when you break them apart and release energy, you get atomic energy, which we found out about in 1941, first atomic explosion. In the same way, if the quality sattva is a bit predominant in someone, we would say that person is a spiritual seeker. Their inclination is to be a spiritual seeker if the sattva quality is predominant. Someone with a little more of the rajas quality, a few more electrons, just runs around, is busy and active. A way of looking at characteristics of people. After all, what are the body and mind? Nothing but the same prakriti, qualities of nature. So our body and our mind has the same electrons and protons, but it also has these same three qualities. The gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. I keep repeating it for our memory retention. How is it useful to look at life like that? Nature is composed of natural elements, which themselves are the expression of the subtle essence, which is pure consciousness. So now we're going a little deeper. Nature is composed of natural elements, which themselves are the expression of the subtle essence, which is pure consciousness. This is Satchidananda talking. Everything that has manifested, you can call Prakriti, the Mother Nature. This is perfect for Mother's Day. Mother's Day, our wonderful sermon about mothers and the mothering characteristic we all have, whether we're female or male. Everything that is manifested, you can call Prakriti, the Mother Nature. So we can think of Prakriti as Mother Nature. All expressions of that essence are called the Mother. The unexpressed one is the Father. Whenever we have a word, the purpose of a word is to distinguish something from something else. Right? So Prakriti, or Mother Nature, is everything in the sense world, the qualities of nature. What is not that? Satchidananda says it's the unexpressed, which we'll call the Father. The Father. The Father, the essence of everything, cannot express himself. The Father, the essence of everything, the unmanifested, cannot express himself, he teaches. He must express or manifest through the Mother, or as the Mother, as the Mother. Now we have the idea that there's Prakriti, or Mother Nature, everything, the manifest world, and then what about what is not manifest, the unmanifest? Doesn't even work to give it a name, really, does it? No, it's unmanifest. We don't sense it, hear it, see it. We can't even think it. And we call it the Father for purposes of discussion. And the unmanifest, the Father, we see is the essence of everything. So, for example, in our Christian tradition, God is the source and essence of everything. Now, what is God? We used to think of God as these incarnations, people, godlike figures, but in a deeper sense, we know that God is the universe or spirit. It's something unmanifest. And we call God the Father, don't we? God the Father. So he uses the same analogy here. God the Father, the essence of everything, cannot express himself. He must express or manifest through the Mother, or as the Mother. Therefore, know that anything and everything that is expressed is the Mother. In other words, things. Things are expressed as the Mother. anything. Things include all the physical things, our thoughts. Thoughts are things expressed as the mother. Just a way of looking at life so that we can get a foundation to move ahead on our spiritual understanding. Questions? He's going to go more into this. In this sense, we see nothing but the mother. We see nothing but the mother. Don't think that only when you have a feminine body you are a mother. We are all part of nature. Sort of what Rev Russ talked about today. We all have that feminine aspect. We are all part of nature. We are all part of the universe. When we think of the universe, I speak for myself, we think as the universe as being out there, separate from us. And if we could put ourselves on Mars, and the little man on Mars, if he were looking at the universe, he would include Earth, and he would include all of us, and he would see that each of us is a part of the universe. The universe isn't separate from us. We're all part of nature. That's why we say Mother Nature. Part of nature. As long as we are still identifying with our bodies and minds, we'll be tossed constantly by these three gunas. When we identify with our bodies and minds, we see ourselves as separate from the universe, don't we? And he further observes that when we see ourselves as separate, identify our bodies and minds, we're going to be tossed about by these qualities of nature, the three gunas. That tossing about can be called action. Action. Even hunger and thirst is action. Hunger and thirst is action. To fulfill the hunger and thirst, there's more action. Action. So here's the fundamental concept that somehow we need in our spiritual path to break free of identifying with who we are as our body and mind. We like to identify ourselves with our body. We definitely like to identify ourselves with as our mind. As our mind. Can we step back from our own mind and thus understand everything? Or to look at it from another aspect, can we make friends with our mind? Rather than identify ourselves with the mind, can we see it as something? Can we make friends with our mind? Sometimes our minds get angry. We think we're angry. Can we step back and see that our mind is angry? Can we make friends with our mind, even though our mind is angry or sad? Part of the universe, but not who we are. You and I are never sad. You and I are never angry. Our minds get angry and place anger feelings throughout our body. Our minds get sad and bring forth tears and other feelings throughout our body. But we, the essence, are never sad or angry. That's the spiritual teaching. It's one thing to hear about it. It's another to experience it. And we need to hear about it to open the door so that we can be open for the experience. I have a mind. I'm friendly with my mind. My mind is sad sometimes. God bless you, mind. So on. When we identify with our mind and body, we're tossed about by these gunas. We don't just associate them as being qualities of the mind. And that's what we call action, that tossing about. Even our hunger and thirst are part of the gunas, action. Everyone must pass through Prakriti, or Mother Nature. But gradually, when you're ripe enough in your wisdom, your Sophia, you just drop away from her. This is his promise. When you're ripe enough in your wisdom, you just drop away from her. He describes wisdom not as something we get, but rather as a release, like when fruit is ripe and drops from the tree. That's wisdom.
You know, this reminds me, as we progress through our human evolution, the ripe in each moment is like the equivalent of mourning.
Mourning?
Yes. We must mourn so we can let go, so we can be fully present.
Yes, perhaps we have to mourn our idea of who we are before it can drop away.
Which is not easy to do.
It's an opportunity.
That's right.
Satchitananda says, Mother Nature, the qualities of nature, which he calls Prakriti, won't affect you anymore. That's the promise. Passing through Prakriti, becoming ripe through wisdom, dropping away from the Prakriti, and then it won't affect you anymore. It sure does now. Though you have dropped away, you haven't disappeared, he says. Haven't disappeared. You're still in the same cosmos, but Prakriti won't affect you. The things you experience in life won't affect you. It may affect your mind, it may affect your body, but it won't affect you. Subtle, but important. I find that when I'm affected by Prakriti or Mother Nature or whatever occurs in my life, sometimes I'm into it and it sort of has a grip on me. Things start repeating in my mind. And if I'm able to remember this teaching and notice, it's my mind that's having this repeated thought. It's my mind that's upset about this experience. It's my mind that's angry and wants to do some action. That's why sometimes when my mind wants to do some action and it involves an email, I will write a response email to the annoying, irritating, provoking email I got, and complete the whole email and let loose exactly why I'm right and they're wrong. Express how I'm feeling angry. I have this feeling of anger and it's because I need love and need acceptance, and usually quite long emails. And then I leave it in draft form and go away. Leave it in draft form. That's the huge transition, even in drug form.
I've done that. I go one step further. I do not put in a name. In a drug, because in case I get an impulse to put it. You have to have two impulses, right?
Yeah.
That's great. We have to protect ourselves. Yeah. I remember that, to delete that.
The
when I hit the reply, then I'll delete the what's going on before.
Yeah. That way you can really let loose.
Yeah.
Right.
Just in case you accidentally hit send, it won't go.
Just by not sending that email, it's a small step to not identifying with the mind. Not identifying with it. You may still not be there. You may still be in it, but it's just a small step. So that when you look at that draft email the next day, and the next day, And however long it takes for you to drop like that ripe fruit away from the prakriti. I had an email like that the other day, and I deleted all the bad stuff. There was some good stuff in it. So I just put a one-line preface in front of the good stuff, something like, and sent it off. I was okay with that, because I just reported some facts. They were neutral. Anyway, I don't know how my computer did this, but maybe I was looking on my iPad or some other place, and I brought up that email, and it brought up a response from this person. And on top of the response was my original email, and I deleted. I thought, oh my God, I sent out this thing I didn't mean to. How could I do that? I don't know, my email got mixed up. Anyway, I looked at it again on another computer, and no, it had just sent out the amended one. But interestingly enough, the person on the other end of the email who has a certain consciousness she's going through at this point in her life had another angry response. Another angry response. So that's where she's at in her life right now, in some anger. And I was able to step back from that and not react. So the prakriti was there. Through this technique, I was able to gradually drop away from it and gradually let the prakriti not affect me anymore. And I hadn't disappeared. I'm still here in the cosmos, and that particular prakriti doesn't really affect me anymore.
It is wonderful to be able to identify and describe the feeling to encapsulate the human energy, you know, right? To be able to describe it so that we all can share in that same similar understanding of that stuck energy in the body.
It was important for me to describe what was going on with me, so I went through the process. I said, how am I feeling? Angry. How am I really feeling? Annoyed. How am I feeling? Unappreciated. How am I feeling? Unloved. What do I need? I need respect from this person.
Right.
I always had respect from this person, now I'm not getting respect.
Yes.
She's always loved me, and now she's not loving me because she's criticizing me. So I got all that out, put on the paper. But of course, she didn't need to hear that, did she?
Right.
And she wouldn't be able to hear it, would
right.
she? She didn't have ears for it.
Thank you.
It's something like a patient who goes to the hospital to be cured. But until he's well, he has to be there. He can't just jump up and say, I came for a week only, I'm going now. While he's there, he makes use of the hospital and its facilities in order to be healed. That's us on our spiritual path. On the other hand, after he's completely healed, he might still say, this bed is so comfortable and the food is so good. There are sweet looking nurses all around. Why can't I stay a couple of days more?
That's funny how hospitals are.
Yeah.
I want to go to that hospital.
So it's interesting. We often think of, I've often heard of Earth as a school, you know, life as a school. And saying, well, maybe it's a hospital. It's a good
right.
point.
So to get divorced from it, we have to go through a slow transformation
yeah.
of our consciousness. Well, I can't say. But now he'll be pushed out without his even trying to go. You know, when the hospital wants to get rid of you, they discharge you. Renunciation comes the same way, automatically. Renunciation, identification with our body and our minds. It's a renunciation. Even if you don't want it, it will come when you're ready.
Just when you get to, you start loving the earth and all,
right.
See yourself in everyone. Every time you reach a plateau, reach another plateau.
That's right. That's a good analogy. Good visual. Yeah.
Even if you don't want it, renunciation will come when you're ready. The mother, Prakriti, will nip you until you get out. The mother bird pecks at the young one. Now you have grown wings, you can go by yourself, go. So this experience of identifying with our deeper selves is not really something we do. It's not part of karma yoga or action. Rather, it's a release that we allow ourselves to experience, like the ripe fruit dropping from the tree, getting kicked out of the hospital, jumping off the branch when Mother Bird gives us a peck.
Well, I think there are things that we can do to either, it's, you know, it's like the whole thing of gardening. You can either take care of your garden or you can let it go to weed. So you can either enhance or make possible the process, or make, I guess the process, of course, is always possible no matter what. Well, let's just say we can cooperate or not.
We look deep and do what is ours to do. Yeah. We look deep and do what is ours to do. We notice the actions in us that we might call involuntary, a result of our nature. As a result of our nature, we protect ourselves. We're born to protect ourselves. How do we protect ourselves? If we feel threatened, we get angry, or we run away, we fight. These are all natural things. And yet we apply them incorrectly. Wrong circumstances. So doing what is ours to do is coming from a deeper place and not reacting to our reactive self. Right, and letting our actions flow naturally. So in that sense, in a way, although we're acting, in a way we're not. It's just God is acting through us and we're there watching.
I think particularly once you let go of identification with the body-mind, it doesn't feel like there's any choice anymore. It just happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Naturally.
Yeah, I've heard it's sort of like once the momentum starts.
There's a great saying in a daily email I got. See if I can remember it. This came from the Muslim tradition. So Bashimi asked someone, who is the true prince? Who is the true prince? And he replied, the spiritual master replied, the true prince is the one who cannot decide. The true prince is the one who cannot decide. For him, God's decision is the only decision. God's decision.
Who is that from?
Interesting.
I subscribe to Eknath Esperon's Blue Mountain Center meditation. He has a thought for the day, it comes out every day. And on the top of his thoughts, his comments, he'll get a quote from somewhere. And he picked up this particular quote about the true prince from somewhere. In one of the 365 thoughts for the day, more or less repeat every year. Sometimes I keep these thoughts the day around, but then I delete them because I rarely look back. All right, so letting go. That's what we see in nature, Satchitananda says. That's Mother Nature's function. When you're ready, she won't bother to have you here constantly feeding you. She has too much to do. She has too much to do. There are so many children to take care of. But until that time, you should wait. Until that time, you should wait. Be under her loving care. Learn all you have to learn. And this reminds me of another teaching we learned, our three treasures. Our three treasures. The first one is simplicity. The second one is
patience.
The third one is compassion. You can use that spiritual teaching sometimes when you get in a fuss or in a muddle.
Especially when you're up in your head.
In your head.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Simplicity for me.
Yeah.
And patience and compassion.
Mm-hmm. Right. I tend towards simplicity, so that one is not as hard for me. But patience is a great, wonderful opportunity challenge for me. I was exercised patience sort of the other day, a couple of weeks ago. Someone promised they would do something by Thursday. And it's something I was very much invested in. I was working on it all the time, trying to get everything just right. And I was looking for this input by Thursday. They promised it by Thursday. I didn't get the input by Thursday. So on Friday, I put together a very carefully crafted email. It was very carefully crafted. And basically, I said, what the devil did I say? I forgot. But I said I expected this, and I want to move on this this weekend. Get it done with. And it was either in that email, I think it was in that one, towards the end of it, something hit me, and I said, but on the other hand, I'm committed to being patient.
Wonderful.
I did put it in. I want to get this done. I'm sick and tired of working on this. I'm ready to go. I'm all prepared. And I knew this other person had other things to do. But on the other hand, I'm patient. So you just go with your spirit, do what you have to do, and whenever you're ready, let me know. And I did let it go. I did let it go. Now, the funny thing was, this person called me, like she said she would, on Monday. But it was on my answer machine on my cell phone, which I never look at. And it wasn't until Wednesday that I got a call from this person and said, well, let's do this. Are you ready? I said, okay. And I didn't realize from 2 days before she tried to contact me, but it was just on my... And then we finished what we needed to do. It was all in plenty of good time, and it all worked out very well. And she was grateful. She even sent me an email saying how grateful she was that I gave her some space to get the things done that she needed to do.
Wonderful. Great story, Steve.
There are so many children to take care of, but until that time, you should wait. Wait. Be under Mother Nature's loving care and learn all you have to learn. Actions, learning. Until you're ready to drop. We're going to look at that slogan number 5 again, and we'll start off with number 4, and we'll just review 4, 5, and 6 again. So we can put everything in context, and then we'll move on to number 6. All right. So 4 was, ceasing to do things will not make you actionless, nor will you rise to perfection simply by renouncing actions. We are creatures of action. So it's not by renouncing actions, rather, it's rather by renouncing our attachment to our being, our mind and body, is who we are. Sloka 4. Sloka 5, the one we've been discussing, No one is free of actions, even for a moment, because everyone is moved to do things by the qualities of nature. And even when we get more enlightened, we are still part of Mother Nature and moved to do things by the quality of who we are, the qualities of Mother Nature. And number six, whoever stills the body as if seated in meditation, but mentally continues to think about sense objects is deluded and a hypocrite. The slokas tend to point the way and then the not way. Here's the way, how to go about it, and here's the things to watch out for. Whoever stills the body as if seated in meditation, but mentally continues to think about sense objects, is deluded and a hypocrite. This reminds me of another one of those sayings I picked up in the Daily Word. Let's see if I can remember it. Someone asked a famous rabbi, said, "Rabbi, I'm in the synagogue, but I just can't focus on holy thoughts. I keep remembering what's going on with my business." And the rabbi replied to him, "Well, if in the synagogue you're drawn to thinking about your business, why not in business direct your mind to holy thoughts? How do you think about holy thoughts in your business?" I paraphrased it. He said it much more eloquently. In your business, think holy thoughts. So, if we continue to think about sense objects, that's delusion. We're hypocrites. So, the sloka casts a label on us to get our attention. The two ourselves are not hypocrites, but our minds can be hypocritical. So, we don't take being a hypocrite personally, rather we notice, my mind could be hypocritical. But of course, I am not. I'm something else, the Father. Here's the commentary. Many times we think, "I'm fasting. I'm not going to eat anything today." Does anyone fast here today? And ever fasted?
Yeah.
Sort of a little bit? Mm-hmm. Well, you can imagine yourself fasting. "I'm not going to eat anything today. But what about tomorrow morning? What shall I eat then?"
That's hard.
Physically, we're not eating, but mentally, we are. Absolutely, we are. Years and years and years ago, I went to something called the EST training, EST. You ever heard of that? Years and years ago. It's now called the Forum. It's a confrontational setting where one is confronted with one's mind and body and so on to make some transformation. One of the comments the teacher made was about when we're thinking about going to a restaurant to have a meal, and we can see the menu, or we're at the restaurant, noticing the menu. He says, "You're eating the menu. You're eating the menu. When the food comes, you've already eaten. You ate the menu. Eat the menu." We let ourselves become absorbed in outcomes and expectations. So much so that we experience the outcome or the expectation before it ever happens. There's a TV show I was watching the other day, you've probably seen this before, when the kids were lined up for vaccinations. One kid was really afraid of, "Oh, this was Doc Martin. Have you watched Doc Martin?
On the show, yeah.
TV? Oh, he's really funny, though. The grumpy old doctor makes you laugh. Anyway, a kid was in his office to get a vaccination. He was afraid. So Doc Martin prepared his arm with the alcohol. The kid went, ow, that hurt. And Doc Martin says, what do you mean? I haven't even given you the shot yet. Now I gave it to you. Take that. It was funny. So the child was experiencing the anticipation and the expectation. He was eating mentally before the food was served. An action is evaluated by its motive, not by the action itself. An action is evaluated by its motive, not the action itself. What's going on in our consciousness? For example, why do you eat? Now I know your tummy sometimes grumbles. I know sometimes you salivate. Remember the Russian doctor, Dr. Pavlov, who experimented with dogs?
Mm-hmm.
He'd ring a bell and he'd feed the dogs. And after a while, whenever he rang the bell, the dogs would salivate.
Mm-hmm.
What were the dogs thinking when he rang the bell? What are you thinking when you think of food, that's an action. What's your motive for eating?
Oh, everything underneath the sun, right? Everything from nourishment to being alone to not good enough, thoughts, you know, thoughts that are not true that we tell ourselves subconsciously.
I was thinking like socialization.
Yeah.
Like go out.
Celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All kinds of reasons. Maybe because we're
feeling. What is your motive for eating before
the way it tastes?
Yeah. Looking forward to the way it tastes.
Yeah.
Looking, and then experiencing the taste, right. That's our motive. Eknath Eswaran, in one of his daily talks, said that he had an awakening at some part of his life with regard to food. He realized that the purpose of food was just one thing, to nourish his body and make his body healthy. That was the only purpose of it. Everything else was secondary. And by noticing that the purpose of food was to make his body healthy, he taught himself to step back from food and only choose foods that made his body healthy, so that he could do what was his to do. There's another strong aspect to food, of course, and that is habit. Habit. Most of us eat three meals a day at about the same time. Our body gets used to that, just like Pavlov's dog.
Mm-hmm.
So at a certain time in the morning, if that's when you eat breakfast, your body gets ready for breakfast and you even salivate. Same for lunch. Lunchtime shows up. I know that's true with me. About 12 noon, I start salivating. And then I go look for something to eat. The challenge of food, therefore, is whenever our natural prakriti shows up, salivation, it's part of prakriti, can I step back from my own mind, my own prakriti, my own sensations, and say, all right, what's the purpose of this salivation? What's the purpose of this? Well, it's to keep my body healthy. Let's see, does my body need some food at this particular moment? Make it healthy? It might. Or you might look down and say, actually, there's a reserve here that the body can use if it really needs it. And it's perfectly healthy as is. And I think I'll choose to skip this meal for the health of my body. Or when you sit at the dinner table as I do and you load your plate with the food, and because your mother told you you have an empty leg, no matter how much you eat, you never put on any weight, You're still doing that, even though now it puts weight on you. Put a certain amount of food on the plate, generally too much. Generally too much. What spiritual discipline that I haven't done yet can you adopt to deal with that and just eat the food? What it is, you cut the food in half and only eat half, but put the rest back. I know that, but I don't do it.
This is the most challenging aspect of your entire thought.
Really, after I ate a chocolate donut here before. Not necessary for me. Nor was the coffee.
And while we want to take the spiritual principles seriously and look at our motives, at the same time, we want to keep a sense of playfulness and a sense of lightheartedness. So someday a chocolate donut beckons us. Well, we just eat it and let it go.
I have too many other motives I'm working on. Low priority. Isn't that awful?
So we have to take everything in the proper perspective, you know? It's like...
a great way to diet.
What's really important in life? Some things are not as important. A little bit of chocolate down. But what's the long term? Let's see, I think we're at 11 now, so
thank you,
Steve, to close.
Lots of moments of connection and laughter.
Yeah. Any other comments before we close for today?
Thank you.
You just go out and experience Prakriti, huh? All around. Prakriti, including salvation. Our minds churning away and having thoughts and feelings and needs. Oh, Prakriti. Let's focus on a breath for 3 deep breaths. Deep in breath. Ah.